You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis reporting from Exposition Park and Bank of California Stadium on this green, grassy area right in front of this 23,000-seat stadium. We were here a couple of years ago to catch LAFC, which was then a brand new LA soccer franchise. Now we're back here at Bank of California to catch another brand new team that's representing Los Angeles. This team is called Angel City Football Club, and it's LA's first women's pro soccer team since the LA Soul disbanded a dozen years ago. Well, building a brand new franchise, as you can imagine, from nothing is a big ask, and women's pro soccer has struggled in the past, financially and with building a fan base. But if the folks here tonight on the grassy area outside of Bank of California are any indication, Angel City is well on its way to building a loud and a fervent group of hardcore fans. I can see dozens, if not hundreds, of people standing outside, and we're like an hour and a half before kickoff. What's your name?
Deanna Rivera.
And you are?
Oriana Nierajewski.
It's a beautiful day in LA. You're standing outside of this beautiful stadium. So what are you here for?
We love women's soccer. We are soccer players, and we've been fans our whole lives, and we're just so happy that LA brought a women's team here.
It's been a few years, right?
Just a few.
What's your name?
George Zamora.
You live here in LA?
Covina.
Covina. Yeah. All right, so you drove all the way here from Covina?
Yep, every game.
Wow, and you've been watching the Angel City game since the beginning?
Yeah, we're season ticket holders.
You are. Why did you become season ticket holders?
To support women's soccer. And women's rights, equality.
So what about soccer in your life, in your family's life?
Three of my kids play soccer.
They do?
One daughter, two boys.
Do you think it's harder for your daughter to play soccer than it is for your boys?
Not at all. Not at all. Girls' soccer has grown a lot. And it's probably as big as the boys' soccer.
My name is Meg, and my friend here is Mia, and she's a goalie, and the reason her eye looks the way it is she just had a cleat to her eye.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Come closer. Would you mind coming closer? You're Meg.
Yes, sir.
And you are?
Mia.
Mia. Like Mia Hamm?
Actually, yeah.
You're named after Mia Hamm. How nice. All right, so here you are, and you took a cleat to the eye, but you're okay, right?
Yes, I'm okay.
Stitches.
No stitches.
Just stitches. A cut. Just a nasty cut.
Just a little cut, yeah.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
Hazards, of course, of playing soccer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you here?
I played in the late 70s when women's soccer in the early days, the 1974, we had to wear the lacrosse kilts because they didn't have shorts for us.
Thanks, y'all. Thank you so much. All right, I think it's time. Let's go inside. Watch some football. So this is Angel City Pride Night, and there is dancing and drag queens and Vogue and everything else in front of this stadium right now. There is quite the crowd. All right, we're inside the stadium now, Bank of California Stadium, joined now by Aniola Aluko. She's Angel City's sporting director. She's played a big role in putting together the team and the staff that's going to be taking to the field here in just a few minutes. Aniola, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I talked to a fan outside on the grass. And she told me back in the 70s, she grew up in New Jersey, she's playing for her high school soccer team, ladies, women's soccer team. She had to wear a lacrosse outfit because they didn't even have them for women back then. When you look at where we are today and the thousands of people who are here at this game, what do you say to the fact that now people really see this as a viable professional option?
I say thank you. You know, I think the world has changed. For me growing up, this was not a reality for me, people coming and watching women's sport. As a young girl, I didn't aspire to be a professional because it just didn't exist. And now we're in a completely different world and you know, we get to experience that. So I'm so grateful for the sort of change in mindset and the perception that has changed of women's sport. Not just for women, for young boys and men. Like, it's so amazing to see.
Not everybody has the same salary cap or salaries in this country when it comes to the difference between men and women's right. professional sports. What do you do about that?
Well, I think what you do about it is what Angel City do, which is set out with a mission to try to address pay equity, to try to address female empowerment, to try and create revenue streams for its players. Men's football is 100 years older than women's football. But if you told me 20 years ago that this would be possible, what we're doing now, I would have said, no way. So let's see what the next 20 years holds for women's football.
Also with us is Sarah Gordon. She's a defender on the team, but she's injured right now, not playing tonight. Sarah, thanks for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. You see this crowd over here. I mean, obviously, you've got to look and say, wow, this is women's professional soccer in LA.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I mean, every game I watch from the suites, and I am itching to get back out there. The crowds have been awesome.
You came from the Red Stars in Chicago, and it's got to, I mean, is there a difference, do you think, in the fan base and what you're seeing here as opposed to over there?
Oh, it's not even close. I mean, we had some great supporters in Chicago. You know, they were very loyal, but the numbers were not there. Compared to this, this is crazy. I've only seen this in, like, Portland when I've traveled to Portland to play, so I've never actually played with the crowd behind me, if you know what I'm saying.
All right, here we are, less than 10 minutes into the game, and we're in the section where the most ardent supporters are. This is called the North End. And you can hear them thumping, beating, waving flags, all kinds of flags, different kinds of flags, checkered flags, LGBTQ plus flags, Angel City FC flags. And they're all here in support of this team.
My name is Angelique Johnson, also known as Angelique the Artist. What am I doing here? I am cheering on Angel City Football Club, cheering on women's sports, cheering on female empowerment and pride. The passion that women have for sports as players and as supporters is out of this world. We just don't get that representation, so I love this. I'm here for it.
What's your name, by the way?
Gilbert.
Gilbert?
Yes, sir. Martinez.
Gilbert Martinez. Where are you from?
Born and raised in L.A.
Right on. Is this your first time in this game?
No, we have season tickets. This is awesome. I have three daughters. It's only one game today, so, you know, having a girls' soccer team out here is good for them. Good to be able to see, you know, that women can play sports too, you know? So we're out here. We like this section. It's nice and rowdy. Have some fun. This is where the party's at.
Ganelli.
Ganelli? What's your last name?
Chavez.
You have season tickets, and you're here, like, in the section where, like, the most, you know, the rabid fans of Angel City are. Why would you buy tickets in this section?
Just to get out all the emotions. I've been waiting for this team since I was a little girl. So, like, everything, like, every single game, I'm, like, rounding up for them all the time.
The game, by the way, finished in a draw, 0-0. But this is soccer, where even a scoreless draw can keep you on the edge of your seats and still banging away. Angel City now has 4 wins, 4 losses, and a tie going into their game at home against the Portland Thorns this Friday night. Angel City FC is a new team, the first of its kind in Greater LA in more than a decade, and with more than 16,000 in the stands on this night. No matter what the scoreboard said, it was a win. All right, straight ahead, there are gas station blues all over the place, but why is California always among the most expensive? And what, if anything, can be done? That's yours on Greater LA on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Depending on where you go, you could be paying north of 6.25 or more for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline across Los Angeles. AAA says the national average is 4.86. So you're paying way more than anywhere else in the United States, even Hawaii. And there is a debate about why that is here in California. Is it because of gas taxes for road construction, repairs, and maintenance? Is it because of the war in Ukraine and refinery capacity? Or is it because oil companies are taking advantage of the current economic moment and charging whatever they want? Most of them have made record profits in the past few years. Well, state legislators recently announced a bipartisan committee to look into whether or not we're getting screwed at the pump. And to tell us more, Jamie Cord is here. He's the president of Consumer Watchdog, a nonprofit advocacy group. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. And Sungwon Son is here. He is a professor of finance and economics at Loyola Marymount University. Professor, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with you, Professor, because we are coming out of a very long pandemic and months now into the war in Ukraine. The United States isn't getting oil from Russia anymore, as are many other countries not getting oil there. Is that contributing to the rise in gas prices, or is there more to it?
Oh, definitely. We could look at it as a four-legged stool. Number one, the demand is very high, especially during the summertime. Second, there are supply constraints and high costs. You mentioned Russian sanction. That's one of them. Next is taxes. There are all kinds of taxes in California, both federal and state, and that is an important part of the price increase. And the next one is, of course, regulation. Many of these are environmental regulations, and we need environmental regulations, but also there's a trade-off that, you know, does limit supplies and raises prices, especially in California, where we have a so-called summer blend of gasoline, and that adds to a higher cost of gasoline. So these are some of the key factors.
Jamie, what do you think? I mean, I would say, you know, last summer we were paying, what, a couple dollars less per gallon, right, than we are today. So, I mean, what is going on in your mind?
Well, Californians are paying $1.50 more per gallon than the average U.S. driver, $1.50. And that's not explained by environmental costs and taxes. That adds 60 cents. So I know what's going on because I've read the refiner profit margins in California. So what's happening is when the oil refiners bought their crude oil contracts, they've done it 3 or 5 years ago when crude oil costs were $50 or $60 a barrel. But they're charging us gasoline prices that are based on crude oil prices that are $129 a barrel. And they're keeping the difference, the profits. So we've seen this in the first quarter profit reports of two of the five refiners in California. There are five refiners that control 96% of the gas supply. Two of them report their profits from the refining. And we know that PBF, which has refineries in San Francisco and LA, its California profits were 78 cents per gallon in the first quarter of 2022. And that's only through the end of March when prices just started to peak over $5. That's double the profits from other parts of the country. It's four times the profits from the first quarter of last year. It's profit taking based on their bet on cheap crude oil. But it's not fair when you figure out that people have to choose between gas and food. And they're not saying this. They're saying it's about environmental costs and taxes, and the proof is in the profit reports.
So you're saying that these refineries bought oil, crude oil, years ago, 2-3 years ago, when oil was, what, $50, $60, $70 a barrel, and now crude oil is like $129, $130 a barrel. They're charging what the current crude oil prices are as opposed to how much they paid for the oil that they're refining.
Right. And economics would say you do that. You buy low, you sell high. But we live in a society where people need gas to get around, where high gas prices are a driver of inflation, where it's killing the economy and it's killing families. And it's not fair to have this level of profit. Plus, the oil refiners are claiming it's because, not because of their profits, it's because of taxes and environmental costs. That's just not true. They only add 60 cents a gallon, and we're paying $1.50 more a gallon. So someone's got to step in and not only take a look at these profits, but also come up with a new price gouging law that regulates them, that says if there is a level of profit that's over a certain level or more than a certain percentage of what the companies are making in other parts of the country, it goes back to the consumer, it goes back to the state, because this level of profit-taking is just obscene, and we've never seen it in this market in the last 10 years.
Professors, I mean, obviously, is that what's happening, and has it been happening a lot lately? Does it always go on? I mean, is there like a 2 or 3 year lag about what refiners are charging to process the oil, or how does it work?
That is inaccurate. You can buy you know, corn, wheat, pork belly, oil at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. But the futures market usually goes out about 6 months, not 2 to 3 years. I mean, you know, no one will sell you oil or corn or pork belly 5, 6 years or even, you know, 2 to 3 years out because it is too risky. So when you buy oil, you can buy it in the futures market about 6 months in advance. And then so I don't think it is accurate to say that you can buy them, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in advance. Crude oil accounts for more than 50% of the cost of gasoline that we pay. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't some unscrupulous gasoline stations charging higher prices than they should. But, you know, aside from those few gas stations, it is a matter of supply and demand. When demand goes up, when the supply is tight, of course, the margin goes up. When the demand goes down and the supply is plentiful, the price goes down and the margin goes down. So this is very cyclical. And this is what is known as supply and demand. So I don't think we are looking at a price gouging situation. It sounds great and wonderful, but simply I don't think it holds water.
Even with these oil companies making the profits that they're making.
Well, again, you know, I don't want to defend their, I'm a professor, I don't want to defend their profits, but what I'm saying is that, you know, during good times, of course, they make more. During tough times, they've gone through them. You know, prices go down and the margins go down. That's how the market works. So when the price goes down, the margin goes down, now we're going to go to the big oil companies and says, we feel so sorry for you. You know, we want you to raise prices to restore your margins. We don't do that. I mean, you know, again, we should let the market system to operate. And I don't think the market system is broken. I think it is working.
We're going to have to wrap it up there. There's so much going on. We're certainly going to keep talking about it. Professor, thank you so much. Sungwon Seon, Professor of Finance and Economics at Loyola Marymount University. Jamie Court, the President of Consumer Watchdog. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Speaking of gasoline, an LA City Council member is working to ban the building of any new gas stations in the city of Los Angeles. The reason is to help fight the climate crisis and move away from the dependence on fossil fuels. A couple of cities have done this already. The first was Petaluma in Northern California, but none of those cities is the size of Los Angeles. And to tell us more, LA City Council member Paul Koretz is behind the motion, and he's with us right now. Councilman, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Give us a quick nuts and bolts of this ban. What are you talking about and when would it take effect? How would it work?
Well, I think this is a common sense measure. Ever since Governor Newsom announced that as of 2035, there won't be any more gasoline-powered vehicles sold in California. And while that's somewhat late, considering the devastating impacts we're already seeing from the climate crisis, for practical purposes, it means we as a state need to begin phasing out gasoline infrastructure and certainly not building any new infrastructure.
You mentioned that there will be no more cars sold, gasoline-powered cars sold past 2035 in California, but there will be millions upon millions of cars, gas-powered cars, that still exist in California. We're already paying record high gas prices. Do you think not adding any gas stations in the future will help that situation?
It really has no impact on it whatsoever. We have absolute saturation of gas stations. I mean, you go a few blocks any direction from virtually anywhere and you run across a gas station. So the fact that a Costco can't add one really doesn't have anything to do with gas prices.
With this ban on any new stations, does it mean that if a station closes, one can replace it, or once it's gone, it's gone?
I have to presume that in the final version, once it's gone, it'll be gone.
So this isn't a cap on the number of gas stations. This is no new gas stations, period.
Yes.
I mentioned earlier that Petaluma was the first city to do this in Northern California. Others have followed, but, you know, L.A. is the second largest city in the nation, and it's a city that's built, you know, on car culture. Can you really make this work here?
I think so, and I think we're talking about a gradual change. One of the people that attacked this said, well, no, we have to make this change, but we have to do it gradually. I don't know what could be more gradual than just not compounding our situation by adding new gas stations, because we're not talking about massive numbers. We're talking about only two or three at a time on average for a year.
What kind of reaction are you getting from constituents?
We haven't heard much from constituents. I mean, we've to the extent that we've heard, we've gotten support from neighborhood councils from Silver Lake to Westwood. We've really only heard support. There have been a couple people that defend the industry, but honestly, there's no loss to anybody. If anything, the existing gas stations will do better by not adding more. It just adds a little extra competition, makes it more difficult for them. But there's really no significant change. It's just stop the bleeding, stop going in the wrong direction, and at least leave it where it is. We're not talking about a step to get rid of existing gas stations. This has nothing to do with any of the over 500 gas stations in the city of Los Angeles, which provide tremendous access for everybody.
What kind of pushback are you getting from the oil companies, from these local owners or the refiners, people like that, businesses like that?
We're really not getting much pushback. I mean, it has no impact upon refiners. The same amount of gasoline is going to be sold in the near term. Adding a couple gas stations a year doesn't add to their business. It just disperses it a little bit.
What's the timeline for shifting to sustainable energy? I mean, you mentioned 2035. Everybody says it's a moving target. You can't really, because we're still talking, what's that, 13 years from now, right? So nobody knows what the future holds, obviously. But as far as banning these gas stations as a priority of the city, what kind of timeline are you talking about?
Banning new gas stations, I think we will hopefully do pretty quickly, because there's no harm done by it. It doesn't change anybody's lives. It will be a change that is completely unnoticed by the consumer.
Paul Koretz, LA City Council member for District 5. Councilman, thanks for coming on and talking to us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a trip to Oxnard and the latest GLA neighborhood series called Born and Raised. That's R-A-Z-E-D. How one artist who grew up there is seeing big change and not all of it good right before his eyes. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Hope you'll join us. Visit the website, by the way, anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. What do you think? Why are gas prices so high? Have you done anything different in your life because those prices are so high? More public transit, driving less, even getting on your bike to get around. Tell us at our website and tell us how you're doing. Give us some story ideas. Subscribe to the podcast, all at kcrw.com/GLA. Or, of course, you can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you get them. You can find us. Just search for KCRW Greater LA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Zoe Matthew, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's episode possible. Thank you for your time and attention. And of course, your ears. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.